Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Yeah, so I think everyone was paying attention to the Destiny CRC02 study. We had learned a little bit about Destiny from the first study that was presented, but within the landscape of HER2 amplification for colorectal cancer, targeting that with an ADC, an antibody drug conjugate, has always been a very, very exciting idea.
Today, Dr. Citrin, Foote, and Thamalapalli joined the podcast to discuss evolving HER2-positive testing and targeted therapies in GI cancers, the latest insights from ESMO 2025, in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Citrin. I'm a gastrointestinal medical oncologist with a focus in upper GI cancers at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center here in New York City. Joining me today are two of my wonderful colleagues and friends, both gastrointestinal medical oncologists, also from MSK. Dr. Michael Foote, who's a specialist in colorectal cancer. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you so much, Sam. Happy to be here.
And Dr. Rohit Thamalapalli, who's an expert in hepatobiliary cancers. Welcome, Rohit.
Thanks so much, Sam. Good to be here.
So thank you for joining us today. It's been about a month since ESMO in Berlin, and we've all had some time to digest the data and the presentations. I want to talk specifically about targeted therapies, especially HER2, one of the most important biomarkers in GI cancers. And I want to start, Rohit, with thinking about how do we test for HER2, and specifically in hepatobiliary cancers?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Sam. Thanks for asking. So, you know, testing for HER2 is a little complicated, and I'm going to try to, you know, simplify it as best I can. But we have multiple different ways to test for HER2, both in tumor tissue and in blood-based testing. One can be IHC, or immunohistochemistry testing, looking for the prevalence of HER2 protein. One can be FISH testing, looking for amplifications of HER2 at the gene level. And then one can be genomic testing, looking for amplifications of ERBB2, the gene that codes for HER2. And so when we talk about how prevalent HER2 is in each cancer type, it can be a little complicated because many different studies actually have, at least in hepatobiliary cancers, different studies have different definitions of what they define as HER2 positive. But I'll say the most common way we think about HER2 positivity, at least in hepatobiliary cancers, is either being 3+ by IHC or 2+ by IHC and FISH positivity. And so when we use that as a cutoff, you know, approximately 10 to 15% of hepatobiliary cancers are what we would call HER2 positive. And so pretty prevalent and think, you know, supports routine testing for this marker. It can differ based on the exact site of origin. And so, for example, intrahepatic cholangiocarcinomas, so cholangiocarcinomas that start inside the liver, the HER2 positivity rate is about 5% or so. But this increases in other types of hepatobiliary cancer. So extrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, so bile duct cancer starting outside the liver, the positivity rate is around 15% or so. And then in gallbladder cancers, actually the positivity rate can be upwards of 20-25%. And so overall about 10-15%, but definitely different based on the hepatobiliary cancer subtype. In pancreas cancer, pretty rare, you know, 1-2%. You know, I'm not aware of any studies looking at HER2 targeted therapy specifically in the pancreas population, although this is a population that we want to look at HER2 actionability kind of in the context of pan-tumor studies.
So some of the testing that you mentioned is very similar to what we see in upper GI cancers, with primarily immunohistochemistry, 3+ being considered HER2 positive, and 2+ requiring FISH amplification. For upper GI, it also kind of depends on location. Overall, it's about 1 in 4, but the more proximal gastric cancers, which is what we see here in the U.S., is closer to 30%, whereas distal gastric cancers, which are more common in East Asia, tend to be about 15%. Mike, what do you see in colorectal?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you guys are saying. So, and it goes also to the biology of HER2, which is fascinating. So HER2, receptor tyrosine kinase, has an extracellular antenna that sticks outside the cell. Intracellular part inside the cell signals to the rest of the important cancer signaling pathways, like MAP kinase, PI3K, AKT. So in colon cancer, that biology really is revealed by the epidemiology as well, which is really neat. So about 2-8% of colorectal cancers have HER2 amplification. Most of the colorectal cancers that have HER2 HER2 amplification are on the left side of the colon. So we're talking about the descending colon, the rectum, the sigmoid. And that's not an accident because we find that the tumor types that are most enriched in HER2 amplification are also RAS wild type. And it's not an accident. It goes back to the biology. If you have a RAS mutation and you target the HER2 protein, you will get resistance. Your drug will not work. And so the tumors on the right side of the colon tend to have more RAS mutations. They don't need HER2 amplification to give that growth signal to the rest of the cancers. So again, 2 to 8% of colorectal cancer will have it. It's up to 10% of RAS wild-type tumors will have it. They tend to be almost always on the left side, 80% of HER2 amplified tumors on the left side of the colon. And it's a fantastic biomarker. I mean, it's very rare. It's rare in colon than the rest of your two combined.
Cancer compared to us.
So. Yeah, but that's a good point. That's a very good point. So colorectal cancer, third most common cancer in men and women. So you actually see quite a few people worldwide with this amplification. And as we're going to get into, it's a really exciting therapeutic target.
And that's a great point because this is not happening in isolation. And it really pairs well with what works and what doesn't work in terms of treatment. So I want to, ask you a little bit, was there anything at ESMO that excited you in terms of some of the HER2-directed treatments in colorectal cancer?
Yeah, so I think everyone was paying attention to the DESTINY-CRC-02 study. Mm-hmm. We had learned a little bit about DESTINY from the first study mm-hmm. that was presented, but within the landscape of HER2 amplification for colorectal cancer, targeting that with an ADC, an antibody drug conjugate, has always been a very, very exciting idea. So DESTINY-CRC-02, this was a single-arm study that took patients with metastatic colorectal cancer that didn't have a lot of options left. They had already had progression on the standard treatments like 5-fluorouracil, oxaliplatin, irinotecan, and really interestingly, some of those patients had actually had treatments against HER2 before too. They did not disqualify patients if they had had previous HER2 therapy.
What were some of those HER2 therapies that they got before?
Great question. So let's talk about that. Yeah. So for most patients, it was trastuzumab and tucatinib. And these were drugs that were studied as part of the MOUNTAINEER study, which was done, again, in a treatment refractory population, second line or more, with progression on all those lines of therapy. Importantly, and this is really important, in the MOUNTAINEER study, they did not let patients with RAS mutations join the study, okay? But in the DESTINY-CRC-02 study, about 15% of those patients had a RAS mutation, and they were allowed to get the drug. So already you're selecting for maybe a tougher population than MOUNTAINEER did. I think that's reflected a little bit in terms of the output, which you get for the readout. But the DESTINY-CRC-02 was very exciting. In this treatment refractory population, you saw overall response rates in the high 30s, which was really, really exciting. This was a population that really you don't see response rates in.
Right.
They're getting drugs like Lonsurf, regorafenib, fruquintinib, which really have an overall response rate in the low single digits.
Yep.
And you're seeing over 30% of patients having responses. The median progression-free survival was over 5 months, and the median overall survival was pretty good too. Now, it wasn't as good as MOUNTAINEER. But again, so MOUNTAINEER had overall response rates similar, but the median duration response was over a year and the progression for survival was over 8 months. But that's also because you're taking patients with RAS mutations. So it's a very exciting therapy. And also, the MOUNTAINEER study didn't let people in who had had HER2 therapy, and this study did. So when you're thinking about when to sequence these drugs,
That's exactly what I was gonna ask. Because, right, so trying to bring this back to the clinic, right? Because trials are really exciting, but when you have the patient in front of you who is HER2 positive, left-sided tumor that has had disease progression on platinum-based, FOLFOX, and then FOLFIRI, and you're deciding what to do and you have these options. How do you think of, presuming no contraindications to one drug or the other, what do you think about? How do you prioritize one and sequence one and then the other?
It's a perfect question. So if the RAS mutant, then you don't have too many options for efficacy. Because again, the MOUNTAINEER study showed, and in previous studies, even My Pathway, which studied two different drugs, trastuzumab and pertuzumab, it showed that RAS mutations really provide resistance if you're trying to inhibit the protein itself. And that's what the MOUNTAINEER drugs—
Activated by the other pathway.
Exactly. Right. The downstream pathways are already activated. So it doesn't matter if HER2 isn't active. You have the RAS mutation providing that growth signal. So MOUNTAINEER drugs don't work so well, the trastuzumab tucatinib in that sense. But the antibody drug conjugate, TDXD, that does work. So that's a clear line for those patients. And then if the patient does not have a RAS mutation, which again, 85% of HER2 patients don't in colon cancer, then I personally like the trastuzumab tucatinib agents first.
Okay.
Because DESTINY-CRC showed us that even if those patients progress, they can still be treated with AC. And vice versa, we don't know. We don't have the data on that.
Okay. So that's a really interesting sequence because you have multiple options. And I know in biliary cancer, there are also some options. So certainly a number of HER2-directed treatment options in colorectal cancer. Rohit, I know there weren't any HER2-targeted trials that were presented at this ESMO, but you certainly have a lot of new treatments coming into the landscape in biliary tract cancer. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're most excited about and what you think the future holds for HER2-positive biliary tract cancers.
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. I think you're right. There was nothing kind of high-level presented on HER2 biliary cancer at this year's ESMO, but maybe that's something we'll be presented at next year's ESMO, so we're looking forward to that. But yeah, very active landscape with regard to HER2-directed drug development in BTCs. We, you know, some of the drugs that we've mentioned, that Dr. Foote mentioned, and some that we haven't talked about yet, but we have at least four different HER2-directed therapies that have really been explored in the phase two setting in BTCs. One is trastuzumab pertuzumab, per my pathway. One is trastuzumab and tucatinib. But the two I really want to focus on, at least for this presentation, because they're really moving into phase three studies, I think are very exciting, are TDXD, trastuzumab deruxtecan, and HER2, which we'll hear a lot about more. We've heard about in colorectal, we'll hear about in the upper GI space. And then zanidatamab. This is a new drug we haven't talked about yet, but this is a HER2 bispecific antibody that hits two different HER2 epitopes. It hits the intracellular domain and the extracellular juxtamembrane domain. And so I'll talk about both of these because I think, you know, there is kind of a lot of potential for both of these drugs in the BTC space. So with regard to TDXD, the data for TDXD so far has been, at least in biliary tract cancers, has been generated from the DESTINY pan-tumor O2 study, which looked at pan-solid tumors that were either HER2 3+ or 2+. And so looking at the BTC population, you know, approximately 40 patients were treated on this study, and the response rate was around 20% overall for BTCs, which in and of itself is important. We should remember that for patients with biliary tract cancer that have been that previously progressed on upfront chemotherapy, immunotherapy, you know, we're looking at, you know, standard of care response rates of about 10% for later line chemotherapy. So we have to be thinking about that as our baseline here. But in DESTINY Pan-Tumor 01 in the BTC cohort, the response rate was around 20% for the 3+, 2+ population. But interestingly, when you break this down by HER2 IHC status, in the 3+ population, the response rate was over 50%. Wow. And so, I mean, this was really promising signal. And this has now led to excitement around TDXD activity in HER2 high expressing BTCs. This has led to now a upcoming phase three study looking at TDXD plus or minus rilvegostomig, which is a PD-1 TIGIT bispecific antibody, and both in comparison with upfront chemotherapy. And so we're going to be looking at activity both in the overall population, HER2 3+ and 2+, but the primary endpoint is going to be looking at overall survival in the HER2 3+ population. And so that's something that we're definitely going to be following over the next few years.
So if you have a patient who's progressed on first-line chemotherapy and immunotherapy, so thinking about second-line treatment options, HER2 positive, would you use TDXD? Do you have access to that?
Yeah, no, I think I would. So, you know, based on the data that's been read out from DESTINY Pan-Tumor 02, now we have an accelerated approval for the HER2 3+ population across solid tumors. And so by that, you know, we have had access to TDXD for patients with BTC who have previously been treated, who are HER2 3+. And so absolutely, you know, we've been able to use this in that population. That's an option I would think about. Another option that is emerging, which is, I think, equally as relevant, if not more relevant, is zanidatamab. And so zanidatamab is a novel HER2 bispecific antibody. Like I mentioned, it targets two different HER2 epitopes, so a little bit different mechanism of action. But the HERIZON BTC-01 study recently demonstrated very promising activity for zanidatamab in a very similar patient population. The study looked at patients who were HER2 FISH positive and then studied zanidatamab in the HER2 2+, 3+ population, than the HER2 0 and 1+ population. The study found out that most patients who were FISH positive were 2+, 3+, and so the vast majority of patients were treated that were HER2 2+, and 3+. Mm-hmm. And what the efficacy data showed was that the response rate in this population was around 40%. But in the HER2 3+ population, it was over 50%. And so,
you know, quite a bit higher than the TDXD numbers you mentioned just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, some of that has to do with which patients came onto the study. You know, I think the zanidatamab study had a higher fraction of HER2 3+ patients. You know, when you look at the 3+ population, the response rate was about 50% in both studies.
Okay.
But in the HER2 positive population, there was different response rates. So I think it depends a little bit about sort of what the breakdown of the patients coming to the study were. But the bottom line is, so for both of these agents, we now have an accelerated approval in the HER2 3+ setting. And so now zanidatamab is now progressing into now a phase 3 trial that's now open, looking at upfront chemoimmunotherapy plus or minus zanidatamab. This is for the HER2 3+ or 2+ and FIS positive population, but the primary endpoint looking at activity in the 3+ population. And so, you know, the thought is that if this is a positive study, this would support the accelerated approval in the 3+ population.
Please join us for the next part of our discussion.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, Medical News Roundup, and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Citrin, Foot, and Thamala Pali. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.